Doug Waddell, 5612 Lake Washington Boulevard, Kirkland, 98033. I wrote a letter earlier this week to the planning department to direct it to both the Houghton Community Council and the Planning Commission, requesting that the two bodies here allow or ask the planning department to evaluate changing the zoning to follow the comp plan changes we just went through in the Houghton neighborhood. I represent ownership of three properties directly west of Bank of America, 6705, 6711, and 6719, 106. And through the process, you know, I was on the Lakeview neighborhood group meetings. You know, we had 12 or 14 meetings, but I also attended several of the Houghton group. They were split in two, and both are under the Houghton Community Council jurisdiction. Through the process, it was when I was at the Houghton meeting, it was voted, I think 5-2 or 7-2, we could look it up, in favor of the Houghton business district allowing some higher density and some higher intense uses. My request is if I have two of those properties are in need of immediate work, and it really doesn't make a lot of sense now to do, and that's my problem, to do things to those. If in the future we're gonna change it, the other option is I have, you know, when the market was better, we had some high end homes that were gonna go in there. It was clear in the Houghton meeting that's not what the public wanted, or at least that group did not want. And furthermore, what really seems inefficient to me is that, you know, we've got kind of got six bodies here. We got, you know, the Planning Commission, you got the City Council, you got the Houghton Community Council, you got the property owners, you got the public, and you got city staff. For the last year and a half, have been immersed in this whole process, and everyone's kind of, we're kind of at the 50-yard line. And if we wait, you know, for another neighborhood's plan, which could be 5-10 years away, you know, half of everyone in this room may not be here, and we're kind of starting at ground zero again. It just doesn't seem real efficient. So anyhow, I'll close by just, my request is simply think about in your minds whether it makes sense to ask the planning department to evaluate looking at this, changing this. I'm asking for anything different. I'm asking for just this property to do what the comp plan says that everyone in this room said it should do, but do it sooner rather than later. That's it. Any questions?
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Is there anyone else? Okay, with that, I would like to open the public hearing on the green codes. Again, file number ZON 10-00031. Is there a staff presentation?
Yeah, I'd like to turn it over to David Barnes to give the staff presentation on this.
Good evening. My name is David Barnes. I'm the project manager for the Green Codes project. Tonight I'm joined by Stacy Rush, senior stormwater engineer, and Tom Jensen, building official, both members of the green building team. So tonight, my intent is to give a brief overview of the green codes, hitting the high points. Then I'm going to be here to answer clarifying questions before moving on to public testimony and discussion. I think it's important to note on the project schedule, we started back in January 2011. Obviously, the Planning Commission, the Houghton Community Council knows that. But for a lot of new folks in the audience, we have been working on this Green Codes initiative since January 4th of 2011. We've had numerous study sessions with both bodies, and here we are tonight, January 12th, to hear your public comment on the Green Codes. And we're going to be moving forward January, February, getting recommendations from both of the bodies, and then moving towards final action, hopefully, in the spring. So what is the purpose of Green Codes? We set out to develop codes that would take basically sustainable actions and translate them into city initiatives, practices, and in this case, tonight, looking at amendments to the zoning and municipal code to promote sustainable actions. So what does that mean? We broadly looked at three major categories, stormwater and landscaping, and we mostly focused on low-impact development. And low-impact development, or LID, is a concept that encourages stormwater to stay on-site instead of running off-site and becoming polluted stormwater and going into our streams and lakes and so forth. The second area that we broad area we looked at was energy efficiency and independence. That includes promotion of solar panel installations and also looking at making provisions for thicker exterior walls so that envelopes could be tighter and also have more insulation. The third major area that we looked at was electric or green infrastructure, and the state of Washington has required cities to make provisions in their zoning code for electric vehicle infrastructure, which includes charging stations, battery exchange stations, and the like. And this was a perfect opportunity to actually put that into the code, and so that we could actually make sure that we were putting those kinds of things in the right places within Kirkland. We also looked at bike racks. It's a viable form of transportation, so we tried to make it a little bit more attractive for folks that are using that to commute or to make their daily trips to the store and so forth. So those are the major three areas that we looked at. Specifically, if we look under stormwater landscaping, we are proposing a new low-impact development chapter. It's a voluntary, incentive-based new chapter that allows lot size flexibility, encourages clustered housing, and would require common open space on a subdivision level. So not on an individual site level. You would need at least four lots or more to make this concept work. Also, I want to point out here that I have revisions from our last meeting from November 28th noted in the meeting packet on attachment 2, as I was asked by both bodies to make those revisions. I want to point out that when we went through this whole chapter, for the most part, both the Planning Commission and the Houghton Community Council were in general agreement with all the provisions, with the one noted difference that not requiring floor area ratio in Houghton. So I thought that was pretty good. Now I said a bunch of words about low impact development and project and so forth. I just want to kind of quickly show what it means. We have a really good example. Here's a typical four lot short plat in the city of Kirkland, and it's in the 8500 zone, and based on the minimum lot sizes that you have to develop here, there's very limited space for putting an access road without encroaching into people's actual building pads. So the developer's kind of forced into choosing one side or the other, usually, in this kind of situation. There's trees here, and he was kind of forced to put the access road there. So we have vegetation that is, that is going to be removed, significant vegetation. Also in the back here, since there's not any lot size flexibility provisions in the current code, there's probably going to be more trees being removed back here. So with the LID chapter, what we envisioned was allowing the developer to have some flexibility in the lot sizes they create. And because they're not necessarily having to create the full lot size, they could go, create a lot about half the size of what the zone requires. They are able to cluster homes, they're able to share infrastructure, and actually put the road in a place that actually preserves the significant vegetation that we saw in the previous slide that's going to go away. And it's important to note that with the flexibility in lot sizes, if you make them smaller, it increases the amount of space that could be used for common open space, which is a requirement of this chapter. And it's also a requirement of this chapter to treat 50% of the stormwater that falls on the site rather than having it run off. And in current provisions in our code only require about treating about 10% as feasible. So this is a little bit better visual of what it might look like. We're showing again preservation of that those significant trees and kind of a better idea of what we visualized this low impact development chapter might produce as far as a low impact development. And I said before, you have to have a minimum of 4 lots or more to actually use this chapter, and it's a totally voluntary chapter. Doesn't have to be used, but the reality is the Department of Ecology is quickly going to be requiring within the next 5 or so years a lot more treatment of stormwater on site, and we're just trying to get out ahead of it and provide an incentivized chapter to do so. The other area under stormwater and landscaping that we looked at was revising how we calculated lot coverage. Currently, lot coverage is defined as any hard surface on a piece of property, a home's footprint, patios, driveways, and things that would, stormwater or rainwater could hit it and run off as stormwater. And we don't allow very many breaks to lot coverage currently. However, we do have some exceptions in the current code. We do allow such things as swimming pools to be exempt. However, we have a really good document that the Department of Ecology had created and the city has adopted back in 2009 in their stormwater manual. And it actually shows the different surfaces that are out there, like pervious pavement, different pavers, green roofs, things like that, that actually could get a break for lot coverage and allow a lot more flexibility. Wanted to point out here a key difference that Houghton has asked to retain that swimming pool exemption with some provisions that we've allowed for. The other area we looked at in stormwater landscaping was some changes to Chapter 95, and is like revising what kind of soils should be when you're amending soils, what kind of places where it wasn't clear whether or not you could use pervious pavement, which infiltrates stormwater directly down into the site. We made it clear, things like that. The second other major area we looked at was under energy efficiency and independence was solar panel allowances. And I think it's important to note kind of like the process that staff went through to actually come up with a recommendation for these different allowances. We put out there that 6 inches on a sloped roof would be acceptable after talking to industry experts saying that you really, with a sloped roof, you don't really need much height allowance. You can get the angle you need, and that's not usually a problem at all. However, where we saw some issues was with flat roofs in the city, or any place for that matter. In order to get a similar efficiency between a sloped roof, a panel on a sloped roof, and a panel on a flat roof, you need to be able to tilt it up. And the optimal angle in our area is like in the 30 degree neighborhood, and that kind of equates to about 20 inches of a kind of a tilt. So one side of the panel would stay flush and one side would go up, and that's for optimum efficiency. And that was one of the things that staff put forward. Also wanted to point out solar panel efficiencies and how the angles affect that. I want to thank Council Member Georgine Foster. This is on page 68 of the meeting packet, and it shows how the efficiencies of the solar panel are affected based on, you know, what angle it's at. So for example, at 30 degrees, if we're going to call that optimal, and that would be tilting a panel up about 18 to 20 inches on a flat roof, our efficiency, if we're just going to call that zero, we can see as we move from 25 degrees, 20, we're increasing the inefficiency actually as we are reducing the angle that we're allowing that panel to sit at. And when we get down to about 10 to 12 inches, we're almost at 6%. But we really see the biggest jump right in here. And if we don't have any provisions for flat paneled roofs at all, And if somebody is built to the height, they essentially wouldn't even really be able to do this. They wouldn't even be able to put panels on the roof at all, because a panel, just depending on what the panel is, could be several inches to 3 or 4 inches, plus some kind of a mounting rack system. They would be precluded from doing so. So I also want to just add, too, that one thing that's not on here as far as solar panel efficiencies, the closer that we get from, you know, an angle down to a flat panel, the dirtier the panels get. They collect dirt, dust, leaves, branches, and all that kind of stuff. I don't have any analysis to show how much less efficient it would become, but they are very sensitive to that. However, when you have some tilt, no matter how little, if you have some tilt, you're going to have a higher efficiency panel, because the dirt and dust and stuff won't collect on that. The other area that we looked under this broad category was allowing existing structures to increase their wall thickness. One of the first things that you should do when you're looking at whether it's putting solar panels on a roof or getting a new mechanical system is trying to reduce the load that your house uses. And in order to do that, you've got to tighten up your envelope. And for newer structures, that might not be a problem. They might have 2x6 or 2x8 walls and so forth, and have a lot of room to get a lot of extra insulation in there and so forth. But some older homes might have 2x4 wall construction. They're never going to get the kind of thickness they need to have a really tight envelope and to really reduce their load for their mechanical system. So this provision would allow a building to put some insulation on the outside of their structure in order to get that tighter envelope. The last area, broad category, that we looked under was sustainable green infrastructure. We created a new section, electric vehicle infrastructure. We talked about that a moment ago. So we've identified where are the appropriate places to put charging stations, and where are the appropriate places to put battery exchange stations. We've probably seen battery charging stations or charging stations here at City Hall. We've seen them at different places, and we're probably going to see them at more commercial enterprises in the near future. However, battery exchange stations, we haven't really seen them yet. They have a lot of them in Japan. It's basically a drive-through where it changes out your battery as you're driving through. But obviously, that's not appropriate in all zones. So we've made it so that it's appropriately zoned. We also looked at parking area design, even putting pervious pavement that encourages water to go down into the soil and recharge the groundwater, wasn't really allowed in parking lots in Kirkland. There's provisions in here now that allow that to be used. And covered bicycle storage I mentioned earlier. We do have requirements to provide bicycle racks in the city, but oftentimes it's kind of like a later thought when a property is being developed, exactly where you're going to put that and whether or not it's in a safe, secure, covered place that would encourage more people to actually ride bicycles that wanted to. So we put a provision in that in the code to allow that to occur if somebody wanted to do that. And lastly, I have to say that, you know, staff are not subject matter experts on all of these topics, and we were lucky enough to have a technical advisory board. Some of them are in the audience tonight. And so we had a nice collection of architects, landscape architects, and stormwater engineers to really help us come up to speed on low impact development, and also to help inform us about what might work. You know, so that really, really helped us, and we were very grateful that for that. We've also made presentation to the Kirkland Alliance of Neighborhoods to kind of let the neighborhood group leaders know what we're doing and what Green Codes' intent is. We've also had a meeting with the developers group to look at our low-impact development chapter to see, hey, does this look like something you'd be interested in doing? And if so, why? If not, why? And we were able to glean some really great feedback, which we've incorporated into the the packet to help more people want to try to do low-impact development on a larger project scale. We've also used the Greenie listserv, which is a listserv for citizens in the city, and we've maintained a project website with our schedule and links to all the meeting packets that we've had over the last year to keep people up to date. That concludes my presentation, and I'm here to answer any clarifying questions that you might have.
Any questions? Yes.
David, were there any emails submitted by citizens for the hearing?
There was. I received questions, and I did receive an email from a local realtor talking about the potential reduction in property value due to views being obstructed. Yes, I did receive one email on that. And I am aware of the blogs out there too, and I've read them as well. And I also want to say that, you know, in our creation of green codes, it was never really in the intent of green codes to, significantly negatively affect people's quality of life, property values, or the like. Really, the intent was to encourage more sustainable actions that could help, you know, make the environment even better that we live in than today.
David?
Yes.
Has there been any discussion about going back to review this in, say, 3 years or so to see how it's working and if any of these projects are being built or?
You know, there hasn't been any discussion, but just looking at like what is in the code right now, for example, we had affordable housing provisions, and those changed over time. There's been tree regulations where, staff has been asked to come back and report what's happening to our canopy. Is what we have on the books working? So, yeah, even though this project hasn't been talked about doing that, it's a possibility. Yes.
I don't know if I should ask the question now, but in the solar experts that I spoke to, they were all mentioning the fact that they recommend annual maintenance of any system that is put up. So, in other words, washing them and doing whatever, just sort of like when you wash your windows.
Yes.
And so I was wanting to know that that should be, I would think, shouldn't that be considered as well? The fact that an annual maintenance helps remove dirt and soil and things.
I mean, I think that's a really good idea. However, in conversations, unless you're actually going to get up there or you're going to hire somebody to do it, a lot of people don't go up on roofs and for various reasons.
They were telling me it would cost like $150 to go up and center. Did you just go ahead and answer that to me?
Right.
Any other?
One question.
Oh, Betsy.
Yes.
I'm sorry. You said there was one letter from a. Is that in our packet?
Email.
It were one email.
I got an email, but it's not in the packet because I got that email after I produced the packet.
We'll get it to you.
We'll get it to you.
Thank you.
George, then John.
When you talked about flat roofs, if I heard you right, you said that one side would be 20 inches higher than the lowest side?
You mean the panel? The panel height?
Right.
So on a flat roof?
Not for solar panels, but just flat roofs themselves for runoff purposes?
No, flat roof is less than a 212 pitch. We've defined it. It's and a 212 pitch on a roof is fairly flat. It's maybe have a little bit of, bit of slope.
I thought you mentioned that the requirement would be that, or recommendations that one side would be 20 inches higher than the lower side. No.
Oh, what I was saying was that you would need to tilt a panel up.
The solar panel.
Solar panel itself, not the roof, the panel itself, in order to get the most optimal angle. So one part of the panel would be near the roof, and then the other would be tilted up away from the roof to get the appropriate angle. That's what I was saying.
Yeah, maybe I missed it, but I thought it was before that discussion about panels. It was something about flat roofs and the pitch of a flat roof?
Well, there's two different standards, one for a flat roof and one for a pitched roof. And the flat roof would be a flat roof, and then the panels would be angled at 20 inches maximum height above the flat roof. Nothing to do with the angle of the roof or the flatness of the roof. It's just the panel itself would extend above the roof by so many inches.
Because as that panel is shortened, the pitch is going to be greater. Is that correct?
I think it depends on the orientation of the panel. And I should have mentioned this, that in the Northern Hemisphere, panels are, they're supposed to be facing the south.
Right. Okay.
So.
John?
Yes, I have two questions. Yes. They both relate to page 21 of our document. I'll ask them both as they're related. It is in item C of the green area on the chart, stormwater and landscaping, item number 2. It discusses discounts for low-impact development. And so the first question is item number 2. We really haven't heard any discussion about what those discounts are. I don't even know if that's relevant, if we hear about that. The second line, which is the gray shaded area, it says the discounts are based on the actual impervious area. It almost seems to me that the discount ought to really be related to how much of the stormwater is tied to the storm system. Because if somebody has 100% LID and they deal with all their stormwater 100% on their property, they should get a bigger discount than somebody that's only dealing with 50% of their water on their site.
Right.
Because the real financial burden is on the system downstream and how the city takes care of that. So could you talk a little bit, if you've talked about that and what the discussion's been?
Yeah, this is important. The reason why we haven't really talked about this, we probably each body looked at this briefly. This is a city council review items. These are policy changes. And these are things that we're talking about now, and ideas we had to kind of incentivize, people actually handling their own stormwater on site. However, these provisions, that doesn't go into the zoning code, which is why we haven't had that discussion in any of our study sessions. Does that make sense?
That part makes sense.
Yeah, that's why.
It's really a surface water utility issue,
yeah,
Related to the fees and not a zoning code or a municipal code issue. As part of this process, but something we'll be talking to the city council about at some point, I think.
Right.
Thank you.
And your second question is?
That was it. Okay. The impervious area versus the amount that
the
goes
point.
Into
it's a, the... It's a good point to bring up when we have those discussions about how that might relate to the fee.
Thanks.
Georgine.
I just want to go on the record just so that it's part of the hearing. The fact that I did do other research finding other mounting systems at angles so that we know that it's not a proprietary situation, and that was in your packet today distributed for me. Also, on Kirkland Views, I thought it was interesting that there appeared an article on solar panels versus views. And there were 9 comments, and I thought it was interesting that even the mayor's speech on the state of the city only got 2 comments. The solar panel issue got 9 comments. And so I just made copies of it just so everybody knows, and it is part of the record so we can deliberate and discuss. And I also included 2 articles that I found on the aesthetics of solar panels and other solar energy solutions, that, you know, how they're advancing so quickly and how they can impact. So I just wanted that to be on the part of the record.
So if we can get copies, we can put it in the packets for the next meetings, if that's okay.
Yeah, she made copies.
Okay,
for all of us.
Some of it's in the packet, right?
Okay.
No, this is totally different.
Is that different? How did I say
that? Oh, this came... Yeah, that's
here, right.
Yes, so it was distributed by... Prince. Sorry, what is your name so I don't just say you?
Prince Cowan.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Glenn?
I want to acknowledge all the work Georgine put into this, because that was really good. That was a lot of work, collecting all that. And I read this, and I'm sort of agonizing over, you know, where to go with it. And I rate Kirkland Views, which even had comments by planning commissioners, interestingly enough. But I really appreciate you doing all that, and I'm not sure what the, you know, where I go on this first, but it was definitely from, you know, some, you know, food for thought that I'm mulling over. So thanks for all that work.
Byron?
On the stormwater utility discounts, what do we give discounts for now?
Right now we have a, for residential, there's a discount for seniors. Discount, and that's about it. There is, for commercial, if they have a rainwater harvesting system, then you get a discount for that, but that's about it.
How old are you, Byron?
I was just wondering if we would, not yet.
What's the cutoff age?
65.
I was just wondering, I mean, it seemed like we'd want to have some alignment between what we give discounts for and the utility, and then how this is going to work, because essentially they're about the same thing. Discounts for pervious surface, and that makes sense. I understand schools get discounts for, but this wouldn't apply here, but for having classes and sustainability.
Not many cities
do it for seniors, though.
The schools get, that were in the King County, in unincorporated King County, get a discount, but schools do not in the city of Kirkland. They have to pay a stormwater fee based on the amount of impervious area. And that's another thing. For single-family residential, it's a flat rate. Right now for 2012, it's like $201 a year flat rate, whereas commercial and multifamily is based on actual impervious area.
Okay. And on the solar, on the flat roof, we're talking the maximum they're going to be is 20 inches.
Yes, we're talking about residential, and maximum right here, the one point would be is 20 inches.
Okay.
Yes.
That's a single family.
Any other comments? I have one question, David. On page 43, you got section 95.32.3, 3D, and it says no required yard shall be reduced by more than 5 feet in residential zones. I'm just wondering if that would potentially conflict with other provisions, because I know we were talking about reducing the front yard setback to 10 feet. And we've got other reductions in here. And I'm just wondering if that could potentially conflict with some other sections of the code, and if it might be better just to leave that off and just have the section stand on their own, whatever we want to reduce the yards to.
I think we need to take a look at it. However, Chapter 114, which is what I think you're leading to, where in low-impact development we allow lesser setbacks, I believe that we would have that supersede for those projects. But I don't know if we'd want to remove this from the code for non-LID projects. I think
not for non-LID projects. I just want to make sure that we don't build in an internal conflict in the code. So
right.
Just take a look at that. Just make sure that we don't run into that. Georgine?
One more question. Would including the document that I had furnished as a private citizen, I mentioned about PowerFlex, although it's not officially a solar panel, it is a solar energy solution. So where would that fall? Is that considered a solar panel?
What is it? Is it like a thin membrane or?
Mm-hmm. And the fact that it has a 25% efficiency? I mean, where would it fall? People just put that on the roof anyway. You know, just...
Yeah, it could be almost like a roof covering, I guess.
But it's...
Would that be something that would be installed as part of the LID development?
Mm-hmm.
Could be. The developer would just install that instead?
Or they can do it on, from what I've read, somebody just replacing their roof material, they can put this, adhere it down so that that can be the way they create their solar energy.
Is that Is that in the packet?
It is. It's on page 65.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I put so much stuff in here, you may.
The amount of information is multiplying at a rapid rate.
Yeah.
And there's window glazings now that can be, you can use those to generate power because they're putting silicone
right.
in the window glazings. I mean, there's just, stuff is going to be advancing faster than we can probably keep up with it.
So mm-hmm. I guess the question we're asking is that 20 inches... Are we giving too much by giving that 20 inches? Because that's...
I think that's the question that's been raised. Is,
yeah.
Is 20 inches something that's really necessary?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's going to be a compromising situation, I think that's the question that we
right.
will be addressing.
Kay, if that's...
Mike, just clarification. Are we going to have a discussion after the public hearing about some of these points, or does that happen now?
It's the February 9th. We'll have a...
I would suggest you have some discussion. If you have some guidance yeah. here, it would be helpful. But your deliberation and recommendation wouldn't come until subsequent dates, the 23rd for Houghton and the 9th for Planning Commission. But it would be good to have some discussion on these points that we've been looking at, and or any clarifications or points of view you want to pass on after mm-hmm. the public comment period.
Oh, after the public comment. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll hold it then.
Okay, with that, I'd like to open it up to public comment. We have one speaker signed up, Katie Malm. Katie?
Hi, do you need my address or anything?
Yes, please.
Okay, 115 Fifth Avenue South, number 8, Kirkland. And I reviewed the... I looked through the green codes and the goals and so on. And I just want to talk about the basis of thought on global warming leading to sustainable development, the Sustainable Development Agenda. In 2010, climatologist James Hansen predicted that we would have only two more years before it will be too late to save the world from a fiery fate. I would be more inclined to take him seriously if he hadn't previously made a number of erroneous apocalyptic pronouncements. In the mid-1980s, he confidently proclaimed the Earth would be 2 to 4 degrees warmer by 2010, and New York City highways would be underwater. Leading global warming proponent and climate scientist Phil Jones, co-creator of the infamous hockey stick graph used by Al Gore in his infamous fiction film An Inconvenient Truth, revealed that he destroyed the original raw data that supported the global warming hypothesis, making it impossible to review or verify his findings. Additionally, Jones and other climate science associates actively suppressed any scientific studies which disputed their claims as evidenced in the ClimateGate emails. The data and the arguments now discredited by the corruption exposed in the emails leaves the scientific case against the idea of man-caused global warming overwhelming at this point. Quite to the contrary, the scientific argument for man-caused global warming was thoroughly demolished earlier this year with the release of the 880-page study Climate Change Reconsidered, authored by the Non-Governmental International Panel on Climate Change, the NIPCC. The response to that study can be taken as an admission by global warming advocates that they cannot defend their position in debate. Jones confessed last year that no warming of the Earth has actually occurred for the past 15 years. This has been confirmed by NOAA satellite temperature data records. This would be hysterical were it not for the tragic fact that billions of dollars have been squandered and continue to be stolen from our economy and our personal finances because of this blatant falsehood and these misguided individuals. Energy sources are being pursued which are less efficient, more costly, and even dangerous. With burning up electric cars and so on. In your plans, I was wondering why you don't have fire extinguisher stations. then more traditional sources, which has served us well. Do you realize that hydroelectric power is not considered part of, it's not acceptable in this whole agenda? Hydroelectric power, which to me seems quite renewable, but it's not considered acceptable. We must move to windmills and solar panels, which have ISORs, They are eyesores to look at. I just saw a picture of a hill where they completely demolished a hill to install the windmills, and of course pictures of all the dead birds they're picking up and so on. And these are very costly, and I don't understand why we seem to be pursuing this course. So why is the city of Kirkland and this area pursuing this green agenda, which is costly, will reduce our freedoms with more regulation, and cause more hardship to businesses and property owners? When you look at the whole agenda and what's going on down the road, I mean, we're just starting on this path, and the path leads to far more regulation and social control. I don't feel it's in the interest of the citizens of our city to allow these UN-driven, worldwide sustainable development movements to control our lifestyle and further harm our economy. So, I mean, what I'm seeing here, there's some very reasonable things being said, but I'm very concerned with what comes down the road with this sustainable development agenda. So I'm just questioning the whole basis of it. Thank you.
Thank you. That was the last person I had on the sign-up sheet. Is there anyone else that would like?
Sure.
Sure. If you could give your name and address.
My name is Atis Fremenis. I live at 10108 Northeast 68th Street, apartment 4 in Moss Bay. I'm sorry, I don't have anything prepared. I was just based on what I heard here. I think I would probably suggest against having any allowance in height for solar panels. I think the concern is, as was stated before, the technology is going to change. Is this thin film? You're going to get yourself in a real can of worms as to what does and what doesn't qualify as a solar panel. You should also consider the problems of nuisances between neighbors, where one neighbor puts up something just to annoy another neighbor. If you're going to do that, then you need a threshold of saying either you have to get the neighbor's written permission to do so, or they have to meet some threshold of energy, which is, you know, I don't know, some government body says that this is how much energy you must create. It has to be worthwhile to do. So just some things to consider. But I think you're going to get into this slippery slope of trying to regulate this stuff, and the technology will change so fast. I would recommend just have a height limit, whatever it is, and if somebody wants to build and there is a solar energy that helps them, you know, build better, faster, more, let them calculate that into the height calculation and build one height for everybody is what I'm suggesting. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you. Sir.
My name is Dilip Bhandarkar. I'm at 5777 105th Avenue Northeast. And I think I agree with the previous speaker's comment. There should be a single height limit. I have a beautiful home in Houghton with a nice view. And I'd hate to see the house in front of me, which is already at the limit, add another 20 inches to the roof line. It's ugly. It's going to block my view. If people want to do things, they should do it within the height limit. And if you're going to give them 20 inches, give me 20 inches too. And let me decide what I'm going to do with the extra 20 inches. So that was one thing. The other thing is in looking at the runoff situation, the sewer overflow, I was looking at the Seattle Times. And usually the Seattle Times says something, I tend not to trust it. But when I saw this article from the Seattle Times, it says, with rising costs, diminishing returns, and limited budgets, officials in King County, Washington State, and around the country are questioning whether further work to control combined sewer overflow is worth it. Is it worth the $1 billion? So, yes, we need to take care of the environment, but we also have to be fiscally responsible. I'd like to give you this so you can pass it around and look at it. So I assume that the assumption is correct, that the 20 inches is over and above the existing limit. And if I was below that, I can have a solar roof that's 36 inches or 40 inches, as long as the entire structure is below the whatever the height limit is, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Yes. So I agree with the previous person that we should not increase the height limit for any reason.
I'd sign it on the other.
That's okay. Sir? Oh, I think in the front row here. Yeah. and then you can come up next.
Chuck Pilcher, Lakeview Neighborhood, 10127 Northeast 62nd Street. Did you get my email yesterday? Okay, but I asked for input on the differential efficiency of flat versus the 30-degree slope or whatever it is, and I was shocked to find out it's only 10%. We have a perfect roof for solar, and we've actually looked at it. We have a roof deck, a condominium with a roof deck that it's easily accessible by a stairwell. We keep our roof clean. It would be easy to clean solar panels. And we've looked at the membrane technology that basically would be flat and built into the roof. And that is available now and would certainly work, but the price is coming down and we don't have any interest in doing it now because the price will be less later and we just re-roofed. But when we did re-roof, we actually looked at this and considered it as an option. So I agree with the other speakers that I think with the rapidly advancing technology, you can slope panels, 5 degrees and barely make, they won't even raise above the roof cap. So I think the 20-inch thing is far too excessive. And I do have a picture here of what roof panels look like, especially if Mr. Presley is interested. You want to take a look?
Sure.
Actually, that photograph is in our packet.
Okay.
It is on page.
Thank you.
So just for the record, so we have it noted.
60.
It's on page 60 of our package.
And it's actually on the planning department's website.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you. And I would like the record to show that Andy Held has shown up. He snuck in. Sir.
My name is Bob Stile. I live at 6735 Lake Washington Boulevard. And I'm at a loss as to the scope of this hearing, which I will ask the question, is the plat that was shown approved or in the process of being approved?
It's the first, it's approved. The Wang short plat's been approved.
It's four been approved?
Lot, yeah, four lot short plat.
Okay. To that, then, I have a couple of other questions. It appears to be a dead end. Is that true?
It's just an access road going on to the land.
Having dealt with road standards in different jurisdictions, a road that long that's a dead end requires a turnaround, specifically demanded by the fire department for its heavy equipment, and secondly, by the waste removal people to turn their trucks around after they pick up the garbage. I didn't see that in that slide. So I think that's maybe a serious oversight that should have been taken care of in the approval process. Maybe it has. I don't know.
It was reviewed by the fire department and public works and planning and building.
And they bought off on it?
Yes. In some cases with fire trucks, they will allow sprinkling of the structures versus, allowing a big fire truck up the roadway and allow lesser roadway widths.
It appears I need to talk to the fire department. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sir.
My name is Doug Close. I live at 4509 102nd Avenue Northeast in Kirkland. And I just wanted to follow up with my suspicions of the word green, as we see the newscast and the Seattle Times article and following up on the other, I would urge some care. I did not see anything that looked terribly offensive this evening. It seems to be well thought out. But as we run down and start accepting all these things that are green, what I'm concerned about is I fail to see on a regular basis a cost-benefit analysis, a real business-like look at these things, the opportunity costs. When we go leaping into spending $1 billion to solve a 10% problem, as the Seattle Times pointed out, you have to wonder, well, where is this money going to come from? So as a taxpayer, as we all are, we should be concerned about that. So I would just urge care as we get into more of these green items. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir, could you sign in over there too, please? Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing none, close the public hearing and open it up to discussion. Betsy.
Well, I would just like to clarify, after listening to the public hearing, I would like to clarify, when we're talking about the 20 inches for the solar panels and all of this, we are talking only about these particular low-impact housing subdivisions. No, we're talking about all through Kirkland. Okay. Thank you.
John.
Well, I appreciated the comments tonight, and it kind of it's going along with a lot of what I was thinking about with the solar panels, and I hadn't thought about it much until some of the comments that I read that were submitted to the commission. I agree. I feel like we're going down a slippery slope, because I think solar panels, what we're talking about is essentially societal benefits of those, and that's why we would allow a height exception. And to me, it's how do you quantify whether that's a societal benefit? I mean, you could look at, I mean, an example would be, hey, someone could build, you know, essentially a rooftop sun deck, a railing would exceed that limitation, but if they built that roof deck, they wouldn't build a deck or a patio as part of their backyard, which would be an impact in some ways if you looked at that in terms of concrete and other things. So, I mean, and it's a trade-off, really. And so how do you quantify that? So I think once you make one exception, then you could probably reason why you should make another exception, and then an exception after that. And so that would be my concern, is that you have some solid information on that exception is going to stand the test of time, because once you do something land use-wise, it's going to be there for a while, typically. And I agree that technology is changing. A 10% reduction in efficiency, that's what we're talking about in terms of 20%. I mean, 20 inches. So I'd say that we tread cautiously as we move forward on this, on at least the solar panels. But I fully support everything else I heard tonight.
John?
Sorry, I'll have my back to you all, but to speak in the microphone, I want to chat about the solar panels briefly. That's the most important that the discussion was really on tonight. I've been, through the course of the Green Code's been really quiet about this height limit exception, and for the record, I after especially this packet, I spent a lot of time, David, really thinking about that. It's really irrelevant, the societal benefits, as John has said. I think Kirkland has been very firm over the years of protecting height limits and capping the height limit at 25 feet, period, and anything at all that has been looked at to creep that up for any reason at all has been squashed. So I'm absolutely positively of the opinion to hold fast on the 25-foot height limit, period. And I think allow people, if they want to do solar, I also have done some things on my property to allow for it. I took it into consideration, so it's not going to be any more than 25 feet. I'm actually waiting for the technology, so there'll be shingles, so I won't mess my neighbors up. I think technology is going to fix this. I think that there could be view blockage. There could be ugly to look at. I just think it's wrong to think about it. So I'm really going to implore everyone to just say the height limit. That's it.
Byron.
Do we have other exceptions for the height? Other rooftop appurtenances.
in a residential zones for mm-hmm. single family
chimneys.
The chimneys, there's not, you can go up as much as you need to go up. Skylights are allowed a 6-inch exemption to the height limit. If we were talking about multifamily or commercial, they already are allowed a 4-foot height exemption for rooftop appurtenances and their related screening.
And would those rooftop appurtenances include something like a solar panel for something like a building like Costco or something like that?
Well, that's a commercial building. They could, mm-hmm. and but in the code, I've put a provision in there to not have them be looked at that way, so that somebody would not put solar panels on a commercial or multifamily building 4 feet above the height limit.
Was there something about the appurtenances, some percentage of the rooftop or view or
there
something?
There is. If you are going to take that full 4 feet, then you're only allowed 25% of the roof to be used for that appurtenance.
And as we learned this evening, 4 feet would probably be not necessary for a solar panel for a commercial installation anyway, so they would be well within that.
It'd probably be under the parapet, which is the kind of the sidewall on the roof.
Any other comments? I have a question, just a clarification for myself on the height limit for that 20 inches. That is limited just to a flat roof, correct?
Yes.
So on a pitched roof, it's going to be, in fact, it could be put on a pitched roof in such a fashion that you wouldn't exceed the height limit, because the height is measured to the peak of the roof.
Correct. And
as long as you keep it below the peak, you're not going to exceed the height limit. So we're really talking about a flat roof, which is more often found, obviously, in commercial structures than in residential structures.
Well, in Kirkland, you do see a lot of flat roofs.
You see a lot of flat roofs, yeah. But do a lot of them have parapets around them?
I've had that discussion with our building official, Tom Jensen, and he's told me that sometimes what they'll do is a small build-up around the edges on a residential setting. If they're not going to do a rooftop deck and they can't get the guardrail in there, they'll do like, 3 or 4 inches to keep the storm water or the water kind of directed a certain direction.
So we're talking about a solar panel maybe being 14 inches, 16 inches higher than the curb wall around the flat roof.
Depending on how tall the curb wall is, yes.
Right.
Right.
And I would agree, I think most flat roofs on residential structures probably have that curb wall or maybe 4 to 6 inches high. So you're not really talking about a full 20 inches that somebody would see over and above that height of the building.
The way it's written, though, does it say 20 inches above the flat roof, or would it be 20 inches above
I think that that's parapet? That's a really important point, and I think that should be, that language could be tweaked to read above the roof. In most cases, nobody's really going to want to stick it really high above the roof, and the reason why is because you start dealing with wind loads, and there's all these more requirements for how to secure that panel onto the roof.
However, David, if everybody could turn to page 51 in their packet, it's item, it's the, 115.62A4B4B4 is the exact language. So if everybody look at the top half of page 51, that's the exact language. It's 6 inches above the maximum height limit of a pitched roof and 20 inches above the maximum height limit of a flat roof. So, read that. That's the language.
There we go.
But that's the language I think David was talking about. We can maybe look at and tweak a bit, depending on
this is the language now, though.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
And I think that you should look at tweaking that so that actually on a pitched roof, I would suggest that there is no height limit increase over it, because they could slide it down the pitched roof and not exceed the height. And on a flat roof, I'm not even quite sure how to word it, but to tighten it up so that it's over and above the flat portion of the roof, not parapets or anything else. I'm not, I guess I'm a little concerned about just saying that there's no exceptions, because what you're doing is precluding anybody from retroing a building and trying to put in solar panels. So to install a solar panel, there's going to have to be, particularly on a flat roof, some kind of increase in the height of the roof itself. And I think that there should be some allowance. Go ahead.
I think everybody here knows how much of a proponent of solar energy I am. So it may come as a little bit of a surprise to you that I'm getting closer to agreement with John than we may have been in the past. I'm learning a lot about all of the different technologies that are being developed. Don't die of shock, John. And I mean, even on a flat roof with maybe a 6-inch parapet that gets it up to the height limit, there are panels with micro inverters that can be installed that are getting very cost effective, that could even remain below that 6-inch or 4-inch edge. So I am becoming less inclined than I was when we began this discussion to allow for any height adjustment, especially for buildings that have already maximized their obstruction of everybody else's access to sun, fresh air, and views and everything else that big square-topped buildings tend to do. So that's my two cents, is that I think that we need to reconsider. I think maybe with the sloped roof, the only thing I can imagine is the peak of a sloped roof is at the height limit, and you've got a solar panel trying to maximize a gable roof. There's the possibility that a little bit of a stand might peak it up an inch or two, but it could be slid back away from the peak of the roof even to keep that from exceeding the height limit. So I think there's a lot that can be done with solar by just about any building under any circumstance that has access to sunshine that does not require any pushing the envelope that's already been pushed as much as it has. So that's where I'm weighing in.
Laura, would you care if I told them that you know a lot about this because you have solar panels on your house?
And it's within the height restrictions, yes.
So this sounds like something we may want to revisit then, this whole section?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
Any other comments?
Yeah, just to be clear, I'm not against this. I'm just against the height limit, so... Planning on doing this on my own property, yes.
I guess the one other thing I noticed within some of these systems, the panels are always, you know, on this rack that is a few inches above the roof, and I'm sure, you know, they like to avoid any water splashing up there and maybe any possibility of a wind problem if the wind comes in from the other way. But, you know, that in itself is sometimes, you know, excessive, holds them up further than they have to be. I guess it depends on, you know, the model or whatever, but I guess if we looked at some of these who said, you know, these guys, somebody said they could do it in 16 inches. Well, could they really do it in 12 if they didn't jack it up that far or what? I don't know, but that's just one more little thing.
I like the flat roof technology where they rolled it onto those flat roofs. And is that just coming in? Or, I mean, is that just a brand new type thing? Or I know I read it, but I wasn't. Go ahead.
What information I've been finding is just the fact that things are moving at a fast rate. And this was just happened to be one particular product that I found that actually had a decent efficiency rate on it. There's other information here about the fact that there are new technologies where they're even absorbing sun in cloudy conditions. And some of the information that I passed in added this evening, it talks about BIPV, Building Integrated Photovoltaics, which gives, obviously, incentives for new development, that they can actually reduce the installation cost of conventional roofing products and put the photovoltaic type of system in. so that there is a wash. It may be a little more expensive product, but if they don't have to put in regular roofing products, you're saving money there. So there, the system is evolving as we speak, practically. And so in a year, it'll probably be different from what it is now.
Mm-hmm. So. And the development of products that can generate electricity even on overcast days with shadows and that sort of thing. I've been pleased to discover that even the panels that I have on my roof, which were not supposed to be able to generate electricity on cloudy days, are producing better than they were even supposed to. And that was technology that's now 6 years old. So it's advanced far beyond that.
Andy?
In the interest of moving on, says the man who came late, for which I apologize to council, commission, and the public as well, staff too. I think that if there are other key items to discuss, we should move on, but seems like there is a near majority, probable majority in both bodies that are prepared to, for the time being, eliminate the height exemptions for solar panels. As technology is moving on, as John mentioned, the integrated, well, John and others mentioned the building integrated systems as in built into the shingles and so on. So with due apologies to the chair,
that's fine.
We don't need to beat this one too much harder.
That's fine. I just want to, John.
Moving on then, Andy. Moving on. I have one other. If we look at page 9, right in the middle, it says common open space. There's the word protected in there. The last sentence as to how these common open spaces will be protected in the future. In reading through the language of the definition of open space, there really wasn't any language of what protection mechanism is codified in the code. I am have always professed to be a property rights nut, and I'm concerned about what that is going to be and would like a little discussion on that, and with the Planning Commission as well. So, David, first, if you could maybe talk about what mechanisms are in the code, because I couldn't find any.
On page 25, under common open space, it's the last bullet point. And what staff discussed was using a landscape greenbelt easement to protect the required common open space. And that is a document that we use right now to preserve certain areas.
So that's perpetuity. 40%.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
And that would be legally defined in that document where that area was.
All right. In the language, if you look on page 42, it defines open space as all this other stuff. So there's a little bit of
we're talking about two different things.
Right. So what
common open space in the under the low impact development project code, and then just open space. We couldn't use the same exact word because the common open space definition is specific to the LID project.
So I just inadvertently combined those two when I should not have.
Right.
Got it. Okay, so I fully understand now. Okay. And I mean, it's just to make sure somebody doesn't step into that bear trap later.
Thank you.
Is there a way you can maybe...
When it's codified, it'll be more clear.
Yeah. I actually, now that you've re-highlighted that for me, remember all the conversations. So thank you.
With that, entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Hello.
So moved.
Wait. Sorry. We're not going to make a recommendation, or we're continuing the hearing,
The hearing's closed. We're going to go into a discussion on February 9th. Further discussion, and then a recommendation, and then a recommendation on the 9th. Yeah. And they are going to make a recommendation on January 23rd.
Okay, and all public input is closed?
Yeah, you might want to keep the record open for written comment until next Friday.
Mike, are you all through there?
Yes.
Okay. Fellow council members, Tony Levitt will give us before the 25th.
We can't hear you.
Microphone?
You don't have to.
Excuse me.
Tony Levitt will give us the information that we requested at the hearing, and he will have it to us either before the 25th or on the 25th, and he'll probably hand deliver it, okay? And does anybody have anything to say for our council before we go home?
I just want to parrot again. An awful lot of work is done in this, and I want to thank the Planning Commission for working together with us, because this is very nice. Thank you. We have to do this together as opposed to separately. So thanks for entertaining us.
Thank you for joining
us. I want to thank staff, David. This is my first thing on Cybernon that I've sort of been all the way through, and it's really like creating a baby many times over. David and Stacy and everyone's done a great job. It's not over yet.
Regine.
When are you leaving comment open until when?
Well, I suggest you leave it open until next Friday, which is, what's the date on that?
20th.
If that's okay with both groups.
What? Next Friday or next Thursday? I'm sorry, my.
Next Friday.
20th.
So for the audience, you've probably picked up the Planning Commission is going to meet again on February 9th to discuss this issue and then make a recommendation to the council. And the Houghton Community Council is going to meet on January 23rd to consider their recommendation to the City Council. And then for any written comments, you have until January 20th to send anything in that you'd like to the city. So with that, what I would like to do is take about a 5-minute break, come back at 8:20.
Good.
This is good news. I didn't miss anything. I can listen to it on the tape before I deliberate.
Yes.
You miss hearing yourself talk.
Like I said, I didn't miss anything.
I won't disagree.
If someone deserves to go, are they authorized to be
handed up to Ray Steiger in public works?
Siding solar panels. I mean, it's trees on somebody else's property, obviously.
I don't know. I was going to say, someone's going to tell you about this. I didn't see anything about it.
If you're in a place where somebody else's trees are blocking the solar, then you don't have a place to
see. Thank God they could do that at one time.
If you have access to the sun on your site, then you might want to take advantage of it. But it's not like we're going to change the code to say everybody in Kirkland has 100% light to be able to maximize their opportunity for generating electricity with solar.